following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, August 31st. Welcome into the latest Green 19 podcast. I am Jim Ozarski, along with my co-host, Tom Silverstein, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, PackersNews.com. Tom, it was the longest, shortest training camp of all time. 3 weeks. Training camp is over. Let's just get it out of the way. The Packers have now moved on to regular season mode, meaning as we record this, no practice today. They are off Tuesday the 1st, and then they've got a couple more practices before cuts September 5th. But it ended with a bang, if you will, on Saturday. The reason we did not, or excuse me, Sunday, the reason we didn't podcast for you as we have been is because they went a few hours in full pads at Lambeau Field. And I guess the setting, Tom, that we can best describe as Matt LaFleur's attempt at recreating a preseason game. I think by year totals, they ran about 100 plays. He said 51 of which were conducted by, well, they named Aaron Rodgers the starting quarterback yesterday. So by Aaron Rodgers and his first group. Right. So let's start there. Let's recap.
Let me say first that we weren't given the impression that, half the practice was going to go to one segment of the team, which is the starters. That means the twos and threes split 25% or received about 25%. I mean, I'm not critical. I'm just surprised that I felt like the message he gave was this was going to be a really good chance for younger guys. But what it really was a tune-up for the starters. This was like creating a game situation just to get them acclimated to what a game's going to be like.
Yeah, it was, I think it goes to the fact that Brian Gutekunst and Matt LaFleur feel they have their team to a degree, Tom. And we've talked about that throughout these podcasts through camp, how this is a pretty set team. There aren't a whole lot of starting jobs to win. Quite frankly, there aren't a whole lot of special teams, first unit jobs to win. I mean, this is a pretty static roster. In terms of making the team, we'll see how roles develop, as the regular season starts. But if there was any doubt about that, you're right. Sunday proved it. I mean, if you're going to give 50% of the reps to both sides of the ball, I mean, what could someone prove in four reps?
Yeah. Well, if you sit here right now, how many starting jobs are open?
I guess they opened camp with two to me.
Two,
right tackle and inside linebacker in base.
Maybe defensive end in the base was up. I mean, Montrevious Adams was getting the reps, but I wouldn't say he was locked in at that position. I think that was up.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
And I would say, as we sit here now, there's no positions that are really up for grabs. I think everything is locked in. No starting positions. Maybe number two receiver, it's between MVS and Lazard. But other than that, we know who's going to start at right tackle. We know who's starting at inside linebacker.
And isn't number two receiver, Tom, in this offense, we've been saying this for a year, really just what personnel grouping Matt LaFleur wants to run out there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even really like – it's Davante Adams, and then he literally can run out three tight ends in that first package, and there is no start. You know what I mean?
It's who gets – when I look at number two, it's who's getting the most snaps.
Okay.
So not who's on the field first, but if MVS is getting 10, 15 more snaps per game than anybody else, then to me he's the number two.
I would think after this camp, Tom, didn't he do enough? We talked about him enough every day. I think our listeners probably have an idea that of the pair, Valdez Scantling had the better camp.
So the way I look at it is, of all the receivers, he has the highest upside. He's had a pretty solid camp. So they're betting, you know, you want to bet on the guy who's got the highest upside. And I think that's Lazard maybe have been more consistent. I don't know. I haven't really looked at charts or anything like that, but I do know that all they were looking for was MVS to have some good practices, and he did. And because of his talent, you know, it's a no brainer.
Yeah, to go back to Sunday's session. All right, so 51 plays for the starting units, unscripted to a degree. I mean, that's what Matt LaFleur said it was going to be. Of course, everyone wants to know offense. So we'll start there. I mean, I don't know. I guess it looked okay at times. Would you have wanted to see what, I guess, or what didn't you see as it sort of became apparent what was happening? You know what I mean?
Well, what I saw was what I expect this season, which is the focal point of the offense is going to start out being Aaron Jones. It may shift to Aaron Rodgers, but before anything, it's going to be Aaron Jones. And he looks like he's sharp. He's making nice cuts. He's catching the ball with ease. I just think he's going to be what teams are going to have to stop initially. And then as they start to develop that run game, then, you know, I think the idea is that then Rodgers will continue to be productive and more productive and work off that run game, and they'll get a good feel for how to balance that. So I saw a Jones-centric game, a running back-centric pass practice, and I saw Rodgers have an uneven practice. I thought he made some nice, you know, moves on the 2 minute, you know, he drove him down there, but then he had some third and fourth downs that were bad. So to me, that's the vision I have of their offense, that it's going to be run, and Rodgers may struggle a little bit in the early going, but ultimately he's going to benefit if they can run the ball. He's got to be patient.
Right. Well, I guess to that end, I mean, I know we're projecting a little bit, but I think in a practice setting, they're going to practice. How do you think that goes in once you get to the game and sort of the instincts and the desires of the quarterback, or if he thinks there's a matchup and checking out of stuff? I mean, does that just remain the question? Does that just remain, well, we're not really going to know until Minneapolis or even – you know, weeks two or three.
Yeah, and we have to see the buy-in. You know, is he buying into what Matt LaFleur is selling? And so I think that what we'll see is that's what we'll be looking for when we see them play Minnesota. I'm sure he's going to give them some leeway to change plays, but I also think he's going to offer fewer plays to be changed, and that he's going to want to run the ball sometimes and really run it and not change it. So that'll be an interesting thing. We'll have to watch. We'll have plenty of room to watch Rodgers and LaFleur on the sideline, and you know, what their interaction is, and Rodgers' disposition will be easy to see. I just think it's going to be there's going to be a lot to decipher through the first couple of games.
Yeah. So he did get into a rhythm for a couple practices in a row.
Yes.
You know, Jair Alexander had an interception in one-on-ones. I understand what that is. I know Chandon Sullivan in some team settings a couple days ago got inside on Davante Adams, had an interception, and Rodgers and Adams were kind of talking about, you know, Rodgers thought his, you know, whatever, Adams might move inside on the route. I mean, the reason I bring this up, it's not so much the interceptions, Tom. It feels like even with Adams, they haven't had the instant flow as a duo. And I don't know, like Adams dropped a bunch of balls, you know, throughout camp. And maybe that's because he didn't catch many from May, you know, April to June. But any concerns there, or is that just something, again, their history, you just say, okay, and then it's a concern if they don't connect in Minneapolis?
Yeah, I don't think that that's going to be an issue. Ultimately, you know, some of these plays are not game planned against specific defenses. So they might get a look that's, you know, borderline this or borderline that. And you know, there's one reads it one way and one reads it the other. I think when you game plan and you have a feel for what the other team is doing, they're going to connect. They're going to connect a lot. And so to me, that's not a big issue. I think a bigger issue is whether Davante Adams can continually get open with blanket coverage, because nobody really is going to scare them on the other side.
To kind of wrap up here on offense, and we'll flip to the defensive side of the ball from yesterday's practice. You mentioned the run game. You know, Matt LaFleur said A.J. Dillon better be ready for some sort of role. How have you seen that running back room and tight end room shake out? And I phrase it that way, Tom, meaning, you know, those tight ends have to block. You know, has Robert Tonyan proved he could do that enough, more than Jay Sternberger? And then I guess, I mean, you mentioned they're going to ride Aaron Jones, but I don't know. I mean, does A.J. Dillon play 18 snaps and Jamal Williams plays 10? And if that's the case, that means Aaron Jones's playing time also diminishes to a degree. So I'm curious how you viewed the tight end room and even those extra running backs.
Well, in the early going, I think they're going to use the backs a lot and not overload Aaron Jones. I think in the middle of the season and towards the end of the season, they will use more of Dillon and Jamal Williams. And then in the middle of the season, I think I said the beginning and the end. That's what I meant if I didn't. In the middle, you know, Aaron Jones might just be highlighted in some of those games. I think they'll, you know, there might be some games early on when they all get, you know, in the 20s. Dillon, I think, will probably get the fewest because of his questionable pass rushing or pass blocking ability. So I do expect, though, Jamal Williams has kind of been absent, you know, not been used a ton. I think that's because they're trying to get A.J. Dillon ready, and they know what they got with Jamal Williams. They don't have to worry about that. So I think we'll see Jamal Williams get a little bit more in the beginning, and then they'll see what A.J. Dillon does. I mean, that's why I said he's got to be ready, because they want to play him. They think he's a great complement to Aaron Jones.
Yeah. The tight end room is interesting, and I don't – man, Jay Sternberger really must have been set back with that COVID stuff. We talked a little bit about it. I mean, Justin Outland called timeout in a team drill a couple days ago because Sternberger kept lining up wrong. I think it was Jonathan Garvin that knocked him 4 or 5 yards literally on his back in a setting. It feels like it's Robert Tonyan, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara, and then Sternberger is going to get worked in when he proves he can be.
Yeah, he's going to have to keep developing in practice. And maybe it'll click in during these next 2 weeks when he's getting probably more reps than he normally would. I thought he looked good in the tackling session inside Lambeau Field. I think it was on Tuesday last week. It was against the twos and threes. And, you know, since then he's really been uneven. So, he's a guy who's, they need it to pick it up.
Yeah, it's interesting because I thought for a while, Tom, that Mercedes Lewis was a guy who wouldn't lose a job but could get beat out for a roster spot. Based on his age and limitations. But I don't know, you know, I don't know how great they would feel with an Evan Bayless and a Jay Sternberger at this point. And who's to say they may change? They may make that decision as it goes. But
well, I think Mercedes Lewis is a starter. I think he starts the Vikings game, and particularly if they plan on running it, you know, if you can line up him, Lane Taylor, and Billy Turner to the right, that's a pretty good pass blocking trio. So I'm sorry, run blocking trio. So I think Mercedes Lewis will be the starter, but again, it's who plays the most snaps, and right. That's something I'm curious to see who does end up getting the most snaps at tight end.
Yeah, it is. It is interesting that group because again, it's all about the versatility, making things look the same. And at the end of the day, Tom, I mean, they may throw Mercedes Lewis 9 passes, but if 89 is out there, I mean, that's. You're kind of telegraphing a little bit what you're going to do. So although I guess you could say the same thing with Tanyan, you know,
I think we'll see a fair amount of double tight end sets from these guys. So that's something we'll see too. And then maybe there's a little mystery as to who's going out.
Right. How did you view the, you know, run defense? We're talking about the run offense and focus on Aaron Jones. From our vantage point in the bleachers, you know, it looked like there could be holes. Tyler Lancaster told us, he insists that, yeah, it does look like that even on the field. And then we look at the tape and you see a bunch of our defensive linemen or linebackers tagging a running back on the hip, you know, a yard or two, or maybe a tackle for loss. How did you, Is that perhaps the biggest mystery of this team going into week one, is just if they can stop the run at a decent rate?
I think so. I think that's the big unknown. I think we know that they're going to have a really good pass rush. I think we've seen the development of Rashawn Gary and Kingsley Keke. I think those two guys, I want to really watch them when they start to have to play against starting talent. But Keke has really been active. He's so strong, and so is Gary. And so, you know, those guys, when they're in the game with Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith, are going to get a lot of one-on-ones. And I think their pass rush is going to be very good. I think their secondary is pretty good. But I just don't know about their run defense. There's nothing that we've seen that tells us it's going to be better. It's just and that's not a knock on it. It's just that's the way training camp practices are.
Yeah. This starting 11 or 12, if depending on how you want to view nickel packages, some people listening to this. But the two newest faces, honestly, are going to be Kamal Martin and Chandon Sullivan. And I know Christian Kirksey's a new face technically, but being a veteran, he looks every bit like a veteran. I mean, I feel he has recognized things. He can shoot a gap, all that stuff. So it's Martin and Chandon Sullivan, guys who either you had a rookie or a, you know, third-year player who has never been – put in a role of like essentially a starting nickel type of spot. Thoughts there? I mean, I don't know if I think Martin maybe had more splashy plays, but I think if you're also a nickel corner, you don't want to be trailing a touchdown pass up the seam. And I don't, we haven't seen that either. I mean, Sullivan seems pretty solid, at least through camp.
Yeah, my impression is that he's had a good camp and that he can give them what Tremon Williams gave them. Now, he's not as savvy, and but he's probably more athletic now, and he's got good size. So I think from what I've seen, they're okay there. I've seen Kadar Holman kind of step up a little bit. I thought he's picked it up and played some decent ball to where he could be an outside guy and Jair Alexander could move inside if they needed to do that. I think there's some depth there. Will Redmond, I think, is a hybrid guy, but he's going to play. So, you know, and then they're probably going to keep a young corner, you know, a Deshaun Amos or a Will Sunderland. And, you know, now those are developmental guys, but Deshaun Amos has played in the Canadian Football League for 3 years. So he's not a rookie. So I think secondary and pass rush look good for them. I think that's the strength of maybe their team. And we'll find out about the run game. I mean, we'll find out about that pretty quickly in Minnesota, I think.
Yeah, you would think, especially with no live tackling and all of those things, especially Gary Kubiak. I mean, you know, if Matt LaFleur is doing it the way he wants, I mean, that might be a game, Tom, where they combine run it 70 times. I mean, it's literally the same offenses. And obviously the difference in quarterback there, we all know how I feel about Kirk Cousins. But anyway, we can get to that. I do want to touch on a little bit. You mentioned at the top, you know, roster battles or position battles. You mentioned Montrevious Adams. We are in that interesting period now, Tom. Montrevious Adams hasn't practiced in weeks with a toe injury. Raven Green got hurt again, and we don't know his injury, but he has missed time. Oren Burks left practice. He got hurt again and has missed a couple practices. Equanimeous St. Brown has now missed a couple practices. And normally in a 5-week training camp or five, it's like, well, whatever. But I mean, they've got to make cuts with 3 practices left. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm curious, does any of those guys, does it matter? Or do we just pencil them in on the 53 for Saturday? And then if there's a designation to make with them for short-term IR, that is what it is. Or is there any concern with those guys being, no, they're done. I mean, done, they're cut or wave settle or whatever. And maybe there's a chance they're not on the Packers in 2020.
I think there's more flexibility in this situation because opposing teams don't know as much about your fringe guys. So they could keep Montrevious Adams on the 53, clear him to the 53, then put him on IR the next day and pull up someone from the practice squad. So maybe you go, we like Deshaun Amos, but we're going to keep Montrevious Adams and roll the dice and see if anybody, you know, buddy picks him up. And if they don't, then we'll keep them. So I kind of feel that's what they're going to do. There may be a guy or two. I think there could be a surprise cut or two that we didn't see coming. Or we saw poor performance and just didn't think that was the end of the road. You know, like I think they have to make a decision on Josh Jackson. You know, has he shown enough? They've invested a ton in him, you know, as a second round pick. But as we saw yesterday, he had a lot of breakdowns. And at what point do you say, well, we got some other guys that could help? I don't know. It's probably worth hanging on another year. But, you know, those are the kind of decisions that I'm sure that they're talking about.
That is interesting, Tom, and you're right. There's always, you know, is there a surprise, if you will? And at the end of the day, if there is one, you kind of look back and you're like, oh, well, if you connect the dots, maybe it wasn't.
Oren Burks is in that group too. At what point do you just say, okay, we made a mistake. Let's move on, you know, and give a younger guy a chance. So I don't know. I think there's going to be a couple guys like that.
Yeah, it's
I'll give you one more guy, Rick Wagner. You know, if they feel like Yash Niemann can handle that, and I thought he practiced pretty well, the more I see of him, the more impressed I am. He's a big man who looks like he knows how to pass block. He's got really good feet, really light on his feet. I mean, you know, there's going to be guys who can bend under him, and he's got to work on stuff like that. But shoot, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, he's their backup right tackle, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up some offensive linemen there, Tom. I asked Brian Gutekunst about kind of the changes to the active 48 now, on a Sunday, maybe change roster decisions, or, you know, you and I talked about the idea of, you know, true roster or positional versatility. You can have eight linemen active. Does that mean maybe on the 53, especially now in camp where everybody's healthy, you didn't have, you know, a rash of injuries because of games. Do you just take nine because, you know, you can probably get four on your practice squad or five. You have more practice squad spots that maybe you wouldn't typically give the linemen, but now you can.
You
so
could.
Do you think that maybe changes at all, like what the roster building might be, where they kind of go, quote unquote, short on the offensive line?
Maybe. You have to protect your tackles, because anybody who's got any talent at all to play tackle is valuable. And so if you think a guy is halfway decent, you got to protect him. But yeah, you could go short on there, because you can elevate two guys to the 53 man roster. So you could go into Sunday with 55 guys, two of them practice squad, and then you pick your 48 from that. And so every week you get the chance to maybe just bring those guys up, and if they've had a good week of practice, maybe they're the backups that week and someone else is inactive. So yeah, there's a lot of possibilities, I think.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do want to, you know, we'll end this one, Tom, with a wrap on Jordan Love. If the Packers have their way, if their season goes the way they want it to go, I think the most we'll ever see of him again is maybe throwing some, you know, individual stuff on air in the Hudson Center to help guys, you know, catch. We're not going to see him practice again. I'm sure we'll never speak to him again. We probably won't see him again until, I don't know, next May.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, quite honestly. So
sure. Yeah.
What was, you know, Matt LaFleur thought, you know, it was his best practice. He ended with a touchdown throw and some nice throws, but it started a little shaky. Thoughts on the first round quarterback in this really truncated training camp?
Well, my opinion hasn't changed much. It's just, don't read too much into what he did in this camp. He made some progress. I saw him throw a really nice ball across the middle that is not an easy ball to throw. And he put it right on the money, right where only his receiver could catch it. That's the kind of ball that I'm sure they thought he could do. And I've seen him sail passes or throw it to where there's nobody around. And I think that happens too. We used to see that with Tim Boyle all the time. And then year three, now when does Tim Boyle doesn't make those kind of throws anymore. And all of a sudden he's accurate. And so, you know, you have to take his struggles with a grain of salt. I just can't. You could sit there and rip him and say he's going to be a bust, but I'm not going to. I just think it's way, way too early.
Yeah, you're right. It was interesting to see the difference in, you know, missing in sort of individual stuff, you know, where the running back kind of gets out into the flat. And really it's just, I mean, is the running back kind of running the right route to the right depth, and then the ball goes to the sideline and – You're like, how does – and then, as you said, he could thread a needle to a Malik Turner or really throw a nice deep ball up the seam to Darius Shepherd between three defenders. Yeah, I mean, that kind of screams rookie. And I went back, Tom, and looked. We'll have a piece up about playing quarterback in this pandemic. That first practice, you know, whatever that was, August 15th, mm-hmm. that week – that was the first week of actual football practice Jordan Love had had since the Senior Bowl. And I understand that, you know, Tim Boyle, Aaron Rodgers were in that boat as well, but, you know, those guys have had 3 years of NFL experience under their belt. So I think we showed – I think he showed some of that, you know, literal six months of rust of, like, playing football.
I'll tell you a story. I remember Aaron Rodgers' rookie year and – Bob McGinn and I were watching practice, and we watched him a lot, and we questioned his arm strength. You know, like there were some out routes where we're like, boy, that's not special. And I remember asking McCarthy about it, and he's like, no, he could spin it. You'll see. And sure enough. So what we see out there isn't always what's going on. My football expertise is very limited in that regard, since I was completely wrong about Rodgers back then. Anyway, that's kind of where you have to be really careful when you make assessments on quarterbacks.
Right, for sure. And so just to wrap this, but to remind folks, so the Packers, again, are off these 2 days, 3 days of practice, Wednesday through Friday. The cuts will be made by, you know, 3 p.m. Or have to be made by 3 p.m. Saturday. I guess I'm curious to see, Spoon, if you know, Brian Gutekunst starts giving guys their papers a little earlier. I know teams are starting to do that already this week. You know, in the past, they've let some guys go, you know, in the hours before. But if they practice Friday, I don't know. I mean, we'll see.
He doesn't necessarily like to do that unless it's a guy who just they have no interest in. But if it's a guy they have interest in bringing back to the practice squad, no way. They're not cutting him till Saturday.
Right.
3 p.m. Saturday.
And then, of course, everything else remains the same. You know, they can wrap that practice squad by the 6th. And, of course, then we're into game week and the start of what could be – who knows what kind of season we've got in front of us in terms of because, oh, by the way, there's still, you know, a pandemic and all of the other off the field issues that have become pretty important. I mean, we didn't even touch on that, Tom. Mark Murphy's really strong statement to owners around the National Football League to essentially get up and say something as opposed to having written statements. So we can maybe circle back on that at another time.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah, so a lot on the plate. You know, we will be with you. We're gonna get into a regular season rhythm here in the next week, going back to our kind of twice a week pods. You know, we'll keep you updated. So be sure to follow us on all the social channels, so you kind of know what's happening, and of course. Subscribe, jsonline.com, packersnews.com. Download that Packers News app. Turn on the notifications, especially with cuts and all these things coming up. You're going to want to know what's happening, when it's happening, and that's the best way to do it. So for Tom, I am Jim from Lambeau Field. We will talk to you very soon.